For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
"Touchdown Notre Dame!"
or "Irish win."
He's in for a touchdown! The Irish have come from behind!
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer. Joining me, Ed Jordanic, also joining us from IndyNation.com, Mike Coffey. Coffey, I'll ask you first. Obviously the SEC's had plenty of dominance over the last, 6 years now? Seven, whatever. But this year there's been, obviously Alabama isn't who Alabama's been in the last 3 years. I mean, this is probably of their BCS teams the least strength that we've seen. I think anybody would admit that. But just the SEC overall has gotten a lot of hype, and yet you look at the bowl games, and granted, there's a lot of time that goes in between the last game of the season and the bowl game, and a lot of issues that crop up, and it's not always the best indicator. But especially in light of what happened last night in the Sugar Bowl, I mean, you got to really question or scratch your head: is the SEC really that dominant?
Well, I don't know if we've talked about it before, but I know the subject's come up before. When all you do is play body bag games and each other, it's really hard to get a line on how good the Southeast Conference is. I mean, they played very, very few strong teams out of conference. I mean, granted, there was a couple at the end of the year in Clemson and in Florida State, and Alabama played Michigan, but so many of these teams just played four crappy out-of-conference teams and then went right into their conference schedule. I think at the very least this year, the bottom of the SEC, I think, has objectively been shown to be pretty bad. I mean, that's not to say there weren't strong teams. I'm sure Alabama's going to play very well on Monday. But I think overall this year the conference didn't necessarily deserve all the hype, and we might have seen it sooner if they'd actually played some decent teams throughout the year.
Yeah, I find it. I don't know if you got a chance to watch the game last night, Ed, but they give credit to Charlie Strong in Louisville, because he does have a heck of a program going on there. There's a lot of young players on that team, so it's not like you're not going to hear from Louisville ever again. Clearly a strong program, but I think of all of them, Florida, you can make the argument, really struggled this year in light of the fact that they did go, 11-1. Clearly they had some miscues and almost lost to Louisiana Lafayette. But last night pretty much showed their true colors, that hey, they probably weren't as good as a football team as everybody thought they were.
Yeah, I just think for me it re-emphasizes how kind of lucky we are and how important it is to keep our football independence. I mean, independence, and obviously it's much better when you're good, but when you're in a conference, you can be kind of unfairly, kind of lumped in, and you also kind of immediately are ascribed a certain style of football. There's just a lot of things that go along with it, I think, that perhaps can be, we're going to see the flip side of this coin if Notre Dame beats Alabama on Monday night, because all the stories are going to be what's happened with the SEC and why the lackluster bowl season and why is it slip. This stuff is always cyclical. And when you're independent, you really create your own perceptions. You really create your own kind of aura around you, and you create your own reputation. I know five teams in the ACC that we're going to play. And the ACC will kind of, ebb and flow. I mean, that's just the way it is. But I mean, look at the Pac-12 or whatever. I mean, that's a conference that's, it's kind of in flux right now. USC completely laid an egg this year. Chip Kelly's probably out the door. So they have their issues out there. The SEC is, having a rough bowl season. The Big Ten has been down for a couple of years in a row. The bottom half of the Big 12 or Big 14 or whatever it is now, is just lousy. So that'll turn too, So I think, Notre Dame football fans should really, and I think most do, but just really thank their lucky stars that kind of Swarbrick has given us kind of the best of both worlds almost. And I think it helps when you get into situations like this, because you're not kind of just, you've seen many more styles of football. You know, I mean, conferences tend to, you know, people, you know, the winning a conference championship is a big deal. So you tend to really focus on beating the teams that you know, play a certain way. And then they tend to follow each other. And it's this kind of circle of where, like I think Mike Coffey was talking about how, you know, this difficulty with mobile quarterbacks that SEC teams seem to have, because there aren't really any in their own conference, you know, besides Johnny Football, who was new to the conference this year. And, you know, so it's a certain kind of stylistic type thing. And when you're Notre Dame and you mix it up during the year and you play a USC and you play a Michigan and you play an Oklahoma and you play an Arizona State and you play a Florida State and you know, these other teams kind of show up along the ways. I think it helps you when you get to bowl season, to be a little bit more nimble as coaches and players and be ready for anything.
Yeah, I would agree. Coffee, I would, let's jump over to the game. I mean, obviously, we're now T-minus 4 days away for the big one. Unfamiliar territory for Notre Dame. Some distractions, I guess you could say. But, you know, and I think Brian Kelly's in a situation with this football team that they've worked so hard getting to where they're at. I don't see the distractions that Tao had and all the trips that he took and all the awards that he won and all of a sudden, you know, guys being afraid that he's going to show up fat, dumb, and happy and play that way on Monday. I just don't see that happen. I don't see this team getting distracted with the way Kelly runs that program.
No, I don't either. I mean, they've worked too hard and had to do too much to get where they're at. And I think that the coaching staff has done a very good job keeping a business-like mentality and keeping focus so far through the schedule, and I see no reason to believe that it's changed now. I think that this team is going to be able to... They know what they had to do to get here, and I really don't see them blowing it with a week of just goofing around. Although there was a thread on one of our message boards today that I guess Alabama's staying at the Fontainebleau, and they were talking about how that might be a distraction because I guess there's a big nightclub in the lobby and a bunch of other things there, and Alabama fans are complaining that, oh, they put us in a hotel where there are going to be a lot of distractions. It's like, well, you know, obviously there's a lot of them there, but... there's been enough said by both the coaches and the players that they know what's at stake, and they're not going to be goofing around and blowing this opportunity just to goof off for a night or two.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with that. I think, you know, ultimately, if we just look at some of the keys to this game, you know, there's, in my mind, I kind of look at like three things. One of them would definitely be Golson's execution in the red zone. For me, at least, I really think that the pressure is going to be on us and on Golson for him to really make the right reads down in the red zone. So much so that I don't know that we can walk away. Well, certainly if we get in the red zone and score every single time, then maybe you can get away with five field goals or six field goals. But if he can't get a couple TDs in there, a couple TDs to me guarantees a win. Especially if we can score 50% of the time in the red zone with the TD, I think Notre Dame walks away with the win. But clearly, I think there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on Golson inside the red zone to make sure he makes the right reads and ultimately could be a huge key to this game.
Yeah, I see it just a little bit differently. I mean, I do think the key to the game is Golson, and I'm usually the guy who says, you know, who kind of downplays the quarterback play because that's what everybody else focuses on. But I don't think he, you know, I think that, it, you know, Notre Dame can win this game, kind of playing the way that they've played most of the year. I'm not sure we should just expect an immediate dramatic improvement in red zone efficiency. I mean, they've won this year by, you know, being, absolutely incredibly stout on defense in the red zone and being pretty damn average on offense in the red zone. And I think that could be true on Monday night, but that they could still win if Golson avoids the mistakes, moves the chains. And, you know, I mean, I think it could be a one touchdown, four field goal, you know, that could be enough to win the game. I think 23 points, could be enough to win the game. Getting back to distractions for a second. I mean, you know, there was a lot of chatter around town here that there was going to be a academic casualty or two or suspension, and there's still, as of last night, you know, chatter that somebody's not going to be able to play even though they're with the team and on the trip. But I don't, so, you know, who knows, maybe there'll be a little bit of bombshell before Monday, but it sounds like everybody is down there. I know if Lou Holtz was the coach, you know, talking about Alabama's hotel, he'd probably have these guys on a Carnival cruise line about 8-10 miles off of the coast of Florida and letting them come in on dinghies for hamburgers maybe twice before Monday night. I think that, you know, the red zone has been a tough nut to crack all year for Notre Dame and for Golson. And I know that they've worked on a lot. And yeah, I agree with you. If they do much better than they have in the red zone Monday night during the season, then they'll be tough to contend with. But I don't think we should necessarily expect that. I mean, Alabama's pretty, pretty tough. And, you know, this could be a game that's kind of similar, kind of in style to, you know, an Alabama LSU game where it's pretty defensive oriented, and there's a little movement between the 20s, but a lot of difficulty getting into the end zone.
Yeah, I think besides that, the other key I would look at is going to be Lewis Nix and how he handles Jones. You know, clearly there's a little bit of question mark with Jones and how much time he's been off and how hurt is he. I got to believe he's pretty hurt if they're holding him out this long. So that could be a bit of a factor, especially if Nix is able to cause some havoc and force some help down with Jones, because then I think that frees up Tao and gives him the opportunity to roam, you know, especially when they run to that side where the guard's cracking down on Nix. But clearly, I think if Alabama handles us, and obviously nobody's done it all year long, so I'm not expecting this, but if for some reason we don't get the kind of havoc that we need up front, I mean, that could make it a long night with both those backs.
Yeah, I think that definitely is the key. I think the other key is, to build on that a little bit, is that Notre Dame be able to handle Alabama's running game with just their front seven, because a lot's been talked about how So much of Alabama's offense is predicated on Nick Saban calling running play after running play, those backs just pounding and pounding and pounding the ball, and then eventually the defense brings the safeties up to help with the run, and then you've got one-on-one coverage on the wideouts who just have to beat their man by a little bit, and all of a sudden there's a 20, 30-yard pass play. That's the kind of play Notre Dame absolutely has to avoid. And I think the secondary's played really well this year, much better, I think, than any of us expected. But I don't want them to be put in that situation. If the front seven can handle Lucy and the rest of Alabama's running backs, then I think it really, really limits what Alabama can do. Because as far as being a quarterback goes, I think McCarron is strictly average, which is not to say he's bad, but I don't think he's a world beater either. He's not the kind of quarterback you can put the game on his shoulders and expect him to win, especially against a defense like Notre Dame. So if we can play that running game straight up with just the front seven, then I think the chances are we're going to do well.
Yeah, the key for I think another big key for me is that Notre Dame plays to at least a draw on special teams. You know, turnovers and special teams, Notre Dame, you know, in its the big games that it played this year, you know, huge turnover advantage against Michigan. Special teams were pretty solid against Stanford, Oklahoma. Obviously, special teams were solid. So, you know, obviously, Brins has got to make his kicks. If he doesn't miss, I think Notre Dame's got a good chance to win. And they've got to, you know, contain Alabama's return game, not give up any big returns, and do a halfway decent job, you know, on its coverage and its return games. And that's another huge thing. I totally agree with Nix. I mean, he's a key. And the other big key for me is just getting off the blocks well. You know, in the big games, these big environments, when Notre Dame is tough in the first quarter, or at least takes a punch or trades punches or gets to the middle of the second quarter within a touchdown, you know, they do really seem to have made great halftime adjustments all year and played and own the fourth quarter. And if they can rotate those defensive linemen a little bit in the first half and have Nix and Tuitt and KLM relatively fresh in the fourth quarter, I really like our chances.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, one of the things that if you've watched Notre Dame football all year long, you know that these guys pretty much have been beating people up in the fourth quarter. So you're not going to see Notre Dame players with their hands on their knees in the fourth quarter and, you know, wishing that the game were over. Physically, these guys have really kicked it up a notch. this year especially, and it's definitely shown game after game. You know, you really, I think, got to give the edge to Notre Dame when it comes to the fourth quarter and look at the number of games that we've won in that fourth quarter. And, you know, certainly I don't see that being a problem at all. I do think, Coffey, that, you know, I'm not a big, huge fan of AJ McCarron, and there's a couple of reasons why, but I just don't think he's got that kind of killer instinct that a quarterback that can make a difference for a team needs to have. He's more of a guy that's just basically not going to make mistakes. But he's also not the kind of guy that's going to make some big, huge plays or will his team to win, I guess.
No, I agree. I don't think you can necessarily point to a game that says, oh, look what he did to bring his team back. I think he's had solid performances.
LSU might be the exception to that.
True, but then on the flip side, you also have A&M, where he throws an interception in the end zone, driving for what hopefully would have been the winning score. I mean, I think and again, I don't want to make it sound like I'm saying McCarron's a bad quarterback. He's certainly not bad, but he's not a national championship caliber, this guy really scares me quarterback. I think he's very competent, he's solid, but I think if you give him the opportunity to make a mistake, it's not a foregone conclusion that he won't make it. And as we saw in the A&M game, I think he's just as capable of having a brain lockup and not necessarily getting it done. And part of that is, as I think we've pointed out before, Alabama's not necessarily stocked with a bunch of first-round draft picks this year. I mean, they're not the super talented team we've seen in previous title games where you kind of could point at each position and say, oh, wow, that guy's a difference maker. That guy's a difference maker. I don't think they have a lot of difference makers on offense. They have a good game plan. As I said before, they'll pound you on the ground and force you to bring your safeties up and then use play action to get a lot of their passing. But I think Notre Dame has faced tougher quarterbacks. Notre Dame has definitely faced tougher receivers this season. So there's no one on that roster that is really scaring me on offense.
Yeah, Cooper, I think, will be a bit of a handful at wide receiver. But, you know, we faced other guys like that and, you know, have done pretty doggone well. I do think that, Ed, some of the other stuff that comes to mind in this game would be that, you know, you mentioned the special teams. For me, it's really punting when it comes down to Tarek.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about the only thing that scares me.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
25-yard shank is going to kill us against a team like Alabama. But, you know, Coffey is right. They don't really have the kind of horses that they've had in the past. And so that kind of domination, I mean, anything can happen in bowl games. We know that. We've already seen it so far this season. But, you know, I can't see even the 10-point spread. I mean, I would be really shocked if Alabama walks away from this game with a 14-point win or, you know, anything like that. I can't really envision that happening unless there's some sort of major breakdown on Notre Dame's side.
Yeah, I think if Notre Dame puts the ball on the ground, you know, two or three times, or Golson, you know, makes some ill-advised throws, that could happen. But if he doesn't, you know, if he's solid, and I think Kelly will be aggressive. I think, you know, his confidence and trust in Everett is as high as it's been all year. I haven't really heard anything about how he's practiced over the last couple of weeks, but you can just see him kind of gaining confidence in his O-line and receivers kind of trusting him more. You know, he obviously was a little bit more on the same page with Eifert in the last three or four games of the season, which is huge. You know, we know how Tommy and Eifert were kind of telepathic, you know, all year and last year. And so that, I think, is a huge deal because, you know, Eifert is such a weapon. And if they can figure out a way to get him ISO'd a few times or, you know, get him in the seam, you know, those can be some of the big chunk plays that Kelly is always talking about that Notre Dame needs. And I think we also have to be, you know, remember that, you know, it's one of those deals where crazy things happen in bowl games sometimes. You know, if Everett goes down, you know, I think I'm sure that Tommy is preparing like he's the starting quarterback, you know, and that kind of gives me a decent feeling. I think Notre Dame could beat Alabama with Tommy Rees as their quarterback. Obviously, I don't want that to happen. You know, I do think that that it's really going to be, you know, who makes the fewest mistakes. And that includes, you know, making field goals. And like you said, you know, Ben Turk's got a, you know, no 42 yard average with a 61 yarder and a 24 yarder. If he's got to punt four times, they've all got to be over 40 yards and we've got to cover them.
Right. You know, the other, I do think, interestingly, that Eifert could be a key as well. I mean, I don't see Alabama doing anything but, man up on him. You know, they're not going to double team Eifert. I'm sure they haven't double teamed any tight end the whole entire year. So I would see them sticking to that. And therefore, if Golson can make the right kind of reads and recognize when Eifert is man-to-man, especially in the run zone, I mean, I really think that you got to at least make that shot once on four downs if you've got man coverage on Eifert. And I think we will see that. But that could be a huge key to this game is, third down conversions where there's man-to-man on Eifert. And even seeing Eifert split out a bit, you know, to kind of force that. We've obviously done a lot of that this year, and certainly I think we'll see some more of that. But, you know, going back to the point at the beginning of the show, and that is that, you know, Golson is a mobile quarterback. He is, if he's able to kind of get a sense and feel for the game and a sense for that rush and take off when he should, I mean, that's going to put an awful lot of pressure on Alabama. And you know, I think more than anything, you've seen this in these bowl games, how much of a difference a mobile quarterback is, especially on third down conversions. I mean, it's just huge. So it's going to be interesting to see if Golson just manages himself. You know, I'm not going to be terribly surprised if Alabama moves the football in between the 20s. You know, I think that they're a good enough football team that they're probably going to have some success. But like we've seen all year long, once it gets inside the 20, our red zone defense is about as stout as it gets. And it's pretty much proven that point all season long.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think, you know, Diaco trusts, Kavari and Bennett. You know, I mean, I think that he's not going to shy away from, you know, throwing in a few, you know, zone blitzes and, you know, other stuff, bringing one of those guys off the corner and moving, you know, Mata or Farley out to cover somebody, or, you know, I don't think he's going to coach this game a whole heck of a lot differently than he's coached during the year. I think Kelly's the one, or, you know, that might, you know, that we saw that aggressiveness right off the bat against USC. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of that. I mean, they're going to go for it. You know, what do they have to lose? They're 10 point dogs. They feel, I think, that they're still evolving as a football team. That's what's so neat to me about this team. I mean, I'm convinced from listening to them, to the coaches and the players, is they're convinced they've not played their best football yet. Right. You know, they still think that there's definitely room for improvement, there's a game that they can put together their best performance of the year. And when you have that mindset and mentality, you know, and if they're able to get this thing tweaked and peaked, you know, right at the right time, that's a pretty powerful thing. Because, you know, when you're Alabama, you're in a different situation. And I'm not saying that this is about this team, but as a program, they're trying to maintain, you know, and Lou Holtz always says, you know, getting to the mountaintop was a hell of a lot easier than trying to maintain it. And, you know, Saban's a terrific coach, but, you know, maintaining, you know, is a little bit more difficult. You know, Notre Dame is still the young buck kind of trying to prove itself. So those kinds of dynamics, I think, are interesting in a game like this. And Alabama feels it hasn't played its best game of the year, yet, but I tend to think that Notre Dame has a little bit of a psyche advantage in that regard, because it's prepared, trying to grab the crown, as opposed to Alabama, who's prepared the last month, you know, thinking about keeping the crown.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it's pretty clear to say that the trajectory line of improvement throughout the season for Notre Dame has been a lot steeper than where Alabama's at. There's no doubt about it. There's something to be said for teams that go into that last game of the season with that kind of a momentum, and knowing that they can be even better. And I agree with you 100%. I do think that there's that feeling on the team. Let's jump to predictions. I know, Coffee, you've been a little vocal earlier on a few shows about Notre Dame playing very well in this game and winning convincingly. Any change to that at all?
I'm picking 31-14 Irish, with one of Alabama's touchdowns being in garbage time.
No. There you go. Like to hear it.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
To hear it.
Just think of what the score would be if Stoops.
Yeah, I know. I mean, well, Well, then it'd be 45-0, but you know, that's,
right.
We can only have what we have, you know.
That's right, no doubt about it. Yeah, you know, I'm going to say that I still think it's going to be a tight ball game. I think it'll be kind of what Ed thinks, around a 23-point game. I'm going to say 24-20, with Notre Dame's defense being on the field at the end of the game with a stop.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Yeah, I was going to say like 23. I'll say 23-16. Just one touchdown for Alabama, three field goals, and Notre Dame a couple touchdowns and three Brinza field goals, and I think at least one of Notre Dame's touchdowns will be Golson running it in from, let's say, more than 10 yards.
Yeah.
So,
nice.
And then, you know, we'll put a little bow on the national championship, watch a couple more kids decommit from USC and come to Notre Dame, and call it a season.
Yeah, this season's definitely ending a little bit different than we've seen in the last 23 years at Notre Dame, that's for sure. But, you know, the excitement level's up down here. This is going to be great. The atmosphere is awesome. I mean, this is going to be one heck of a football game, regardless of the outcome. It's going to be an awesome experience for Notre Dame. And should be a lot of fun. I mean, there's obviously plenty of Notre Dame people that are going to be here at the game.
Have you seen Autry? Have you ran into Autry Denson lately? Is he locked and loaded for this game?
You know, I haven't. He ended up taking a job up Bethune-Cookman as the
running
backs coach there. So he left the high school here locally after a year. And took a job up at the college ranks. He's wanting to work his way into college coaching, so it was kind of a no brainer. I mean, it was an opportunity he really couldn't pass up.
Sure.
But yeah, there's like I say, there's plenty of buzz going on around here, and
a lot of guys from the 88 team are going to be down there, which is, you know, right in my wheelhouse. That's it's great. It's great just watching all the, you know, and reading all the stuff about that team and some of those guys, and you know, Dean Brown and Tony lived right down the hall, you know, in Dillon, and we'll be thinking about Dean during this week. I'm sure he would have been down for the game. It's just seeing these interviews with Pritchett and Lou Holtz and Mark Green, and Anthony Johnson is a team chaplain for the Jacksonville Jaguars now. You know, he might be down there, it's really pretty cool.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, you know what? One story I think we definitely should make sure should be in here. You were talking the other day about the ticket allocation for the players and how they decided it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think that was awesome. It was a couple of, you know, the players get tickets for these games, and you can imagine how these tickets, I mean, they're as hot as they've ever been. But Brian Kelly's approach to divvying up didn't do it by seniors, juniors, sophomores, and then freshmen. It was GPA. Whoever had the highest GPA, that guy got the most tickets, and then they went down the line. So, and I'm sure they did it, you know, based on, all right, everybody that's above this gets four tickets and so forth. My daughter was actually kidding around with one of the kids on the team that she knows, trying to get a ticket from him, and he basically told her he was going back in to argue his grade because it was going to make a difference on him getting another ticket. I just thought that was awesome. I mean, that's about as good as it gets. So let's hope that story.
Well, you know, that professor probably moved him from a C to an A if he gave him a couple tickets.
Yeah, these ones are tough to come by, but that's kind of cool. I mean, it really says a lot about his approach. I mean, it's. You know, as much as we like to say Notre Dame is where it's at academically and everything else, I mean, this is proof's in the pudding, and certainly that's one indication that he takes that stuff seriously. So, neat stuff. Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Well, hey, I'm looking forward to it. I'm not going to be in the stadium. Coffee, are you definitely in?
Yes. Awesome. Yes, I am.
All right, so at least we'll have some perspectives from both sides of the house.
I will tweet out the location of the Dome and Domer tailgate.
Awesome.
I expect you to. Are you going to come by before the game, Mike?
Tailgate, and I'll be there for sure.
Cool.
And okay.
Then,
good.
I'll head back right before game time. So, yep, it should be fun. I'll have the clicker in hand and rewinding and screaming about every call that doesn't go our way. So,
excellent.
If we lose, we know it's going to be the ref's fault.
That's right. That's me. All right, we'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic and Mike Coffey, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.